Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, my beautiful sweet angels out there in the world. Today is a beautiful day to begin your soul journey, or maybe to continue on where you had already started. With this Soul Healing Summit Season 2, hopefully you get to find your healing modality, that place where you can call it home, the place you come back to your oneness, to your light, to your balance, to your beautiful loving self. They're always meant to be. What a beautiful way to begin this journey than to have our very own master Arcturian channeler that I was lucky enough to be introduced to his work several years ago through Helena Summit. And it's such a pleasure to have him here today and such an honor. Gene, how are you today?
Hi, Veronica. Oh, I'm great. I'm so happy to be here and having this opportunity to be with you and to speak to the audience here and the group. It's really a pleasure.
For those of you who don't know you, you channel this amazing Arcturian frequency, and maybe they are hearing Arcturian for the first time. Can you give us a quick introduction of what that is and how can they manifest in someone's life?
The Arcturian energies and the Arcturians in general, I see them as a type of spiritual consciousness or spiritual beings. Maybe it's how someone might see angelic beings. They have their sort of own or helping spirits, like in the shamanic tradition. And of course, other people might approach them in a different way. So I kind of work with them in that way, like a helping spirit. There is a star called Arcturus. People might already know that, a physical star. It's in the Boots constellation, but using a multidimensional model, just like our Earth has other subtle bodies, that physical star has other subtle bodies like etheric or astral and higher bodies. And these beings are anchored to those non-physical realms that are associated with the Arcturus star. So there's a lot of ways to sort of look at it. I think in a multidimensional model, it makes a lot of sense. Perhaps only if you use only a physical model, it might not make as much sense because I'm not usually expecting some type of physical being or physical craft to work with, but more like a consciousness that can assist us, much like an angelic being or a relative who's passed, who someone's feels is still guiding them.
Is it safe to say that we have every single person has a certain amount of subtle bodies? And once we're aware of it, then we can begin to use these energies to benefit us in our evolution.
Oh, yes, yes. People might use different models. The one that I usually use is a 7 subtle body model system. Like we have a physical body, but then I have like an etheric or a chi energy body. And then an emotional body, a mental body, which a lot of people call the astral body when you combine those two. And then some of the higher bodies is the causal or karmic body, the spiritual or soul body. And then and the divine would be like your non-dual self, the one that's merged with all of God, source, love, all of consciousness.
What we call it divine.
Yes, I call that the divine body.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. The burning question that I have, because we get to experience what you do now. But what was the shift? Because you were a graduate from Yale. How was that shift from their world, which is very much built on science, on things that make sense to the logical mind, to something that is tangible? What was that shift for you going from there to completely, I would say, the opposite direction in a way?
Mm-hmm. Like around the time when I had finished my PhD, like which you mentioned was at Yale, I started to perhaps get a soul calling to move more into the healing space. Science, of course, is healing more in a different sort of model. The model, I would say, in contrast to the model I just mentioned, the multidimensional one, they call it maybe in philosophically scientific materialism, where what's real is like the physical world. It can both help focus a person, but of course, there in all models, even the 7 subtle body model system that I just recommended, there's limitations. And so scientific materialism really doesn't necessarily address, let's say, spirit per se. And there may be reasons for that because of the ability to focus just on the physical realm. You can really advance that realm, which we've seen in our sort of modern science. But I began to actually study with some healers while I was still a postdoctoral fellowship. I stayed at Yale for my postdoctoral fellowship, which is sort of the next step after you finish a PhD if you plan to stay in academia. And his name was Vladimir Maximov. He was from Russia, from Siberia. But they have a very large community in Coney Island, Brighton Beach. And I would go there like every weekend or a lot of weekends. And he would train me. He actually was the person who initiated me into sensing the etheric or energy world. And from there, I'll kind of pause after this. Things just sort of opened up.
From there's no going back. Once you taste the magic, you're like, why would I work? Go back into what I did before. Was that a shock when you moved and you opened up your entire field and your career went into this direction? Was that a shock for your family members or were people around? How did they perceive that?
Yeah, I think with my family, particularly my parents, I was already in my 30s, but even so, I mean, everyone, like if you make that such a radical shift in framework or consciousness, are gonna feel that in the relationship. I had earlier on in undergraduate school, also went through a sort of spiritual transformation or shift. It was earmarked by studying the Course in Miracles. So I was also kind of in a very academic, even more, like academic setting, but then was really, really taken at a soul level in studying spirituality. But maybe because of my age and where I was, it wasn't something that I was doing publicly. Like I wasn't trying to make a living out of it, for example, or putting myself out there. So it was very personal, but it was very personal with all the relationships I had. So I think with the close karmic and family relationships, that was already really the bigger shift. And so they knew I was already more soul or spiritually oriented. So then this is like 15 years later in graduate school, it wasn't as big a change.
So they knew it was coming. I guess a mother always knows in a way that, their child is special and it's going to go around the world and it's going to make a shift and a move and it will make the difference in the world. I wanted to hear a story because channeling different energies and we hear a lot of different modalities around. How is Arcturian specific or different than anything out there that you might have experienced?
I love all the energies out there. Just to give a little background leading up to the Arcturian work that I had kind of connected to, some other star energies that I connected strongly beforehand was particularly Pleiadian energy through Eric Pearl's work, The Reconnection. I had that done, The Reconnection. It's like a DNA process activation around when I was shifting out of science. And for me, that really helped kind of move that whole consciousness energy framework from where I was in science to, this more multidimensional healing work. And then I did do a very strong shamanic training for about 3 years with the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, which was started by Michael Harner. And I think that really helped to transform my consciousness. And then finally, I did some trainings with Stephen Greer. Some people in the kind of ET UFO community probably know him. And he trains you like how you can go out, like behind me is Mount Shasta, like to these sacred sites. Actually, one of his trainings was at Mount Shasta. It's really a consciousness protocol to make connections with ET and star beings. And I probably received a lot of downloads from probably unnamed star beings. They weren't the necessarily the well-known ones. They're just like where this would appear. So that all helped shift my consciousness. I would say with the Arcturians, this is somewhat known from people who've connected with them or who have channeled them before. And there's many different channelers of Arcturian energies. They're usually known for healing, like some type of light technology, consciousness energy technology, to help healing, maybe starting at the soul level all the way to the physical. I find their energy very solid. Like they're kind of no nonsense. And that might be my personality connection to them or theirs back to me. It's always like reciprocal.
So out of different methods or methodologies that you've tried, that it's the one that feels home the most for you.
Well, it was interesting you mentioned that, and this might be helpful for what other people's journey and other people who are, facilitating. Because in the beginning, when I transitioned, like I would travel quite a lot physically, and 50% of it, or the majority of it, well, 50% of it was to go to trainings early on. as I was leaving science to just kind of, I think that was part of my spiritual education. And 50% of it was like business, like was to do healings, do classes. I don't know if business is the right word anymore, but
Mission, we call it
yeah.
mission.
And then soon as it kept going on, and I was learning all types of modalities, but just naturally, and I was just always doing this from my heart or intuition. So there wasn't any mental kind of planning like we would do, like for an education, you know, like take these classes, this every year for 4 years in undergrad, for example. It started to get less and less about going to trainings and more about facilitating something. And then more and more not facilitating necessarily another modality, but facilitating Arcturian work. It was kind of a natural progression.
I almost feel in a sense they have adopted you to be a channel, specifically for at least that's what I'm sensing. Because just the week before our meeting, I'm like, well, come on, let's do this. And they're like, we just want to make sure that you're able to receive us, that you're able to hear us or sense us. And I usually sense and feel things. And then they came very strongly last night and then today. And it's just so interesting because even though you might watch Gene, you're like, oh, it's just one person. He has a huge entourage. And as you're listening to this, you're probably sensing into the energy because they're working on subtle bodies as we're present here now. I want to hear a story or a example of someone that they were maybe lost, or maybe they're in that pivotal moment in their life and they got introduced or activated with this beautiful frequency and their life has changed. Would you please share an example like that with us?
Oh, I know someone actually, you know, I just come back from the Iceland trip, and one of the introductory classes I have is called quantum spoon bending.
Wait, I'm sorry, what?
It's called quantum spoon bending, and it's a little bit deceptive because if you think, oh, that's not, you know, spoon bending, what's that? Some people won't come because it's like too cheesy. But it's actually, you know, people learn how to make the metal soft and bend it. But it's actually a healing class, and it's got quantum healing in it. And yeah, she said, oh, I didn't go to that. But then she came to the Arcturian class, the first one, and she said ever since then, like her life has changed. They may even did a physical heart healing for her, and she said she can't even recognize herself when she first took it till now. And this is about 3 or 4 years. So it's someone who's. It wasn't like an instantaneous healing, but it was like if they really kind of stepped into, and she herself is a healer and facilitator, kind of the energies, what does it do possibly to your life? And she did feel it was very transformational.
So would it be safe to assume that when a person truly feels called to experience or to get the Arcturian energy activation is when they're truly on that spiritual path, they're ready to go to a higher dimension. They've already done a lot of the human work, and now they're ready to experience and open up to higher realms and maybe become the leader and the mover and the shaker of the world. Is that correct?
I didn't quite mention how I, you know, got introduced to the Arcturians, but it may reveal exactly what you said. Right before I started graduate school, I read some books by Joshua David Stone, who in his time was a very big ascension leader and maybe author of 50 books on ascension. They're probably still out there. And I wasn't had no idea about star beings. Like I was still pretty much in the traditional science model, but very spiritual too. And I must have read that somewhere, like he's an Arcturian channel. I didn't know that until after the fact. So I must have been activated subconsciously because I must have read that somewhere, like Arcturians, Pleiadians, and awakened star beings. So that was the first activation. And then 9 years later, I'd had this experience, you know, when I was coming out into energy healing, that a voice said, you're Arcturian. And I hadn't even started doing all that training that I said. I didn't even know what Arcturian meant or where I had heard that word until going back. I realized I had been activated 9 years earlier, all kind of in a subconscious way. So, looking back at what you're exactly saying, if I would have gotten activated prior to my graduate work, I don't think it would have worked because of the amount of time that kind of that graduate work takes. It would like be a clash, it would be a conflict. I wouldn't be able to like grow the Arcturian side. I probably wouldn't even be able to grow the research side. So they kind of kept it in the subconscious or superconscious. And then when it was appropriate, like you said, it kind of blossoms and opens.
Okay, now a deeper question that we're going completely in the other direction, but I sense this from the collective. What is your perception on just this example right now? Do you feel that in a way we have chosen in advance our big major things in our soul path, like the Arcturian activation happening at a certain point in your life? Or do you feel that we sort of get a trajectory, but we go off the highway, so to speak, and then we have these beings coming back to bring us back on the highway?
Yeah, you know, yeah, I love that. Thank you for that question. I have studied some models and done some experiential, work. This idea that prior to our incarnation, we do like a planning, like Michael Newton's work. People have known his work, like A Journey of Souls. He was a hypnotist who realized people were remembering their lives between lives, like that spiritual time before they reincarnated. So I do think we lay like a pattern. And then once we're incarnated, it's still soft, meaning we could choose, like you said, to go very far off the pattern, although we're going to feel like, oh, something's not right here. Or we can like choose to kind of really do those things we chose to do, meet those people we chose to meet. And then you kind of feel this like aha, like, oh yes, I feel like I'm remembering, like I'm on the right track. I think it is a beautiful mystery, but that model and the experiences I've had in meditation seems to, that model seems to help or fit.
In your path, as you're helping people, have you ever had a moment that, because you, in a way, when you channel energies, you are allowing somebody else or something else or a bigger power to, in a way, use this vessel, the beingness that we are, to do work in this world, right? So there's no Veronica, there's no Jean, we're simply a vessel or energy channel for this particular energies. Have you ever had a moment that you had that battle between your humanness, like this is mine, I want to use this for my own needs and or for my ego's needs and wants, versus, hey, I'm truly a channel, and if I'm meant to wake up at 3 a.m. and do this, or I'm meant to do this particular things, then that's all I have to do. What is your take on it?
I love the way you put that. I think more and more people, I kind of use the term transpersonal, like we're letting something greater than ourselves come through us, whether that be in, like you said, energy or maybe through as a speaker or through a writer or whatever we're doing, the spirit world can use us. Yeah, well, actually, it reminds me of this experience. I signed up for a retreat. It was actually on the Divine Feminine. And I didn't want to do the live version. I was now with the Zoom. And so I just wanted to sleep, which was the ego self, the body self, because it was in the middle of the night because it was being held in Europe. And the energy just like came down and I could feel it. And I needed to get on the computer and be part of that. It's not exactly the healing for someone else, but a very strong example of certain energy retreats, healing, where it's one-to-one. There's spiritual forces, sometimes they do really want you there and want you in a certain way. At that point, I guess that you still have a choice, but it's almost like it's easier just to do what the energy and be in alignment with that than to fight. Like I probably wouldn't have been able to stay in bed.
It's not worth going against the current. It's gonna hurt.
Right.
A question that I'm sensing for the collective is, how do they discern between what is the messages from their guidance versus the voice of the ego or the mental construct?
Yeah, when I share like in classes and so forth, I still say that, it's me speaking, even though like I'm kind of feeling connected, just so that people can say, they don't feel like I'm trying to override their will with something higher. So they could just say, oh, that was what Jean thought. And so they could just do whatever they want. Like I wouldn't have to say, oh, this is what the Arcturian said. Because sometimes there's a overcoming of someone's will because you're kind of suggesting that something higher. I think whenever I feel like kind of grasping to a result, then I feel like, oh, maybe I'm getting too involved. Yeah, that's how I can, that's my one of my litmus tests. Like if I'm concerned about the result, then maybe it's more about me and not so much about the channeled message or just the pure divine love or energy coming through.
So you're talking about complete surrender to what comes through. And okay, now there's another question because there are a lot of healers and light workers listening to this. How do you step from one, I don't want to say dimension, but awareness to another? How do you step from your humanness to being a true channel when you're working with someone so the humanness doesn't get in the way? How do you, in a way, close that door?
To the human piece. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. I mean, I think well, on a practical note, like you said about kind of the entourage, like the spiritual beings here, there was a technique that I do use, and I did it, coming here to the interview, and when I hold a class or a healing where I will invite spiritual beings who I work with and kind of just ask them to be present. Sometimes people call that an invocation or a prayer, usually before they start a spiritual practice or something. And so I do invite them. And so I'm kind of acknowledging consciously, through words. I don't usually speak it out loud, but I say it mentally that yes, I'm letting this be a space, not just of myself, but really that I just be a channel for whatever is greatest. And when you do, and you could call that a ritual, something like that. I think what the ritual does is it's a reminder for me, more not really for the beings, because there are, here, they're everywhere. But it's a reminder for me that maybe to step aside. So it's kind of a brass tacks technique.
Then another question that's a personal question to you, because to do that, you completely have to surrender control. Did you have that quality in your life before? Was control something that you had to overcome?
I would say I was very type A, in some respects. Some people have seen that type A side of me that, like, to go to some of those schools, maybe is mostly a little type A. And I probably still have some of that here. But then some people also kind of see a more laid back part of me. So I think we all have different qualities and can bring those through at different times. But I do feel with when it comes to the healing, this style of healing, because there's other energy healing modalities that could be a slightly different. The Arcturian healing method, the way I connect with the Arcturians, I would call it a very yin style, which is very much the way you're describing it. Like you're trying to get out of the way so that something higher can come through. Whereas like an energy healing modality isn't always yin. So like if anyone's learned some like there's some yang style energy healing modalities where like I need to know what chakras inside you that I need to heal, and then I need to go and like do something to those chakras. And I'm not really receiving guidance per se. Like I've learned it through skill. Like my teachers have taught me when someone has asthma, like you clean the front and back heart chakra, and then you energize the back heart chakra with this color and then that color. And so, and then I need to be able to see that clairvoyantly, whether it's through my hands or my eyes. That I would say is much more yang. You're kind of more in the driver's seat as a, I don't know if it's a personality, but as a conscious intention. So I think there is a balance between these two styles of healing, and people probably gravitate to the one that is kind of working for their current maybe soul path or system.
You coming from the scientific world, right? And you obviously probably still have friends from college. They're doctors and they're in that world. How do you express yourself and the beingness and the whole entourage that you show up with everywhere you go? How do you find that connection to people who are more on the logical side, who are more on the scientific side? Do you find that difficult? Where do Arcturian method actually helps you facilitate the connection?
That's great. It's great. Yeah. Like one of my friends actually from sort of like a graduate school, he did come up, he did find me, after 15 years. He was actually the best man in my marriage. And we'd been in touch, and he didn't know the transition I had made. But then online, of course, he saw that. And he was kind of very intrigued. about, you know, the change that I'd gone through. And he's a surgeon himself. So he was very intrigued, but a very open guy. So, but we really didn't talk about it. You know, in the end, we were just talking about our social friendly stuff. I don't try to wear the hat of the Arcturian healer when I kind of feel like there's no reason to, and people are more, I'm not calling it normal, but you know, like the Harry Potter kind of Muggles thing. But when there's no reason, they're interested. But the thing is, I'm finding myself predominantly kind of swimming in the environment of a multidimensional atmosphere. So then the people I tend to interact, like here, we're interacting, clients, the majority of my day is with people who are sort of just already in this world, so to speak. So I haven't noticed a big need or difference. Yeah.
Where do you see us going or moving towards in the new earth? And do you see something that is urgent in our evolution as a collective that we need to address at this moment?
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, I think the big thing, one is the children who are incarnating. I was just like kind of looking at some of the well-known spiritual teachers, whether you call it in the New Age tradition or like Dolores Cannon, Masaru Emoto, and Wayne Dyer. You know, these kind of bigger, they're reaching a lot of the public. And they're all kind of passed at the, you know, within a decade of each other. But then you're thinking, you know, okay, maybe they have other things to do, but maybe some part of their soul might reincarnate soon, or beings of that level would be incarnating, but you're going to meet them as a baby now, you know. And sometimes we forget, like these little kids, these little bodies, you know, in preschool, you don't know how, like, you know, they could be an aspect of Wayne Dyer, you know, here you are. But in order to grow, they still have to grow within this next generation. Like you said, there's a lot of byways and highways that can happen. So the parents, the teachers who would be meeting them, both kind of in a mundane way or in a very physical way, like school teachers, as well as spiritual teachers, you know, I think the faster we can recognize them and kind of be open to their own growth, like a beautiful flower, then they're going to be taking on the next, 100 years. And so I think that's really important. And I think that's why they do say, like a higher soul recognizes the difficulty in incarnating. But if there's, like, of course, the parents and the environment and the teachers, which would be us currently, even though, whether we have kids or not, you know, if they can land in an environment like a soil where their gifts could come out and manifest because they're just such high level, then they will take an incarnation. Like, it's more likely they would take the incarnation, because a very high soul, if they land on a very rocky place, like where their parents wouldn't even understand their clairvoyant gifts, like as a 2-year-old, that could, like,
I landed in one of those places.
that could be kind of a waste of time from the soul level, because maybe that whole incarnation is hampered. You know, even though they're very high, they need the vehicle. They need the vehicle to grow into at least the first, let's say, 10, 20 years before they're on their own. So I think that's an important part of the new earth.
Will you please guide our VIP members into a beautiful journey to maybe step into this new earth, maybe more prepared with new forces, with new beings in our team.
So we'll do an Arcturian transmission. And this is one that's coming through. It's called the Arcturian Anchor Transmission. And this is just because, as leaders in the field, and you don't necessarily have to be an external leader, you could be your own internal leader, but you're holding a certain frequency and vibration for the planet. As any changes are coming up in this sort of next cycle or a new cycle, we can kind of retain our stability. And so we'll ask the Arcturians, who, like I mentioned, they're very straightforward. They feel very, very strong and silent, kind of no frills, is what I was saying. So they have that quality. Okay, so this is called the Arcturian Anchor Transmission. And have you had any specific intentions in connecting to your own guides or the divine and also the Arcturians? It doesn't have to follow this theme. you can state those now, and the energies and beings will work on that. So we're starting the Arcturian anchor transmission to be that strength, that light through whatever times are coming or that we're in the midst of or being called to serve. And as the energies are coming across, I'm silent, but you'll hear me every so often. So we're continuing to deepen the Arcturian anchor transmission. We're moving to the third and final deepening cycle, bringing this Arcturian anchor energies and qualities deep into the core of our being. You can imagine it absorbing into your essential channel if you want. That completes the Arcturian anchor transmission. You can gently but firmly come back to your physical body now. When you feel comfortable, you can open your eyes and snap your fingers.
It felt like one of those delicious naps, even though I felt like I was gone for several hours. I took a nap and came back like fully refreshed.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
It almost feels like the morning shower. You're like, oh, feels good. I'm ready for whatever is to come. That's amazing. Question to you. When it comes to this beautiful healing modality, do you teach others how to open up to this abilities to channel, or is this something that you get chosen to be a channel?
Oh yes, I do teach the method the Arcturian healing method. So there's like levels, and I guess if it's more like the Arcturian, you go into resonance with the Arcturian energy and consciousness through transmissions or attunements.
And how long, or what is the process for someone to open up to it?
Well, there are 12 levels, but you could do it just with level one, which is like a weekend, like a 2-day training.
Amazing. I wanted to ask because you were just recently in Iceland, and I remember I saw on a schedule you were channeling the elves' energy. Would you please share a little bit about that?
In Iceland, like 60% of the population acknowledges the elves as an interdimensional beings, not as maybe physical beings like us, but as a parallel interdimensional beings and dimension. So it's great. Like they rezone their highways and buildings around elven mounds or elven habitats, kind of structures that are known to be portals or gateways to the elven dimension. They have a lot of psychics or mediums who are able to communicate between the two. And what was interesting, we went to different spas are very well known in Iceland for because of the geothermal water. So there's a very famous one in Reykjavik, or outside the capital, called Blue Lagoon. And they were telling the story that just recently, so this isn't like in the past, they were trying to build their main restaurant there, and all the new machinery just stopped. And so they had to bring in an elven medium. And the elves basically said, "We want you to put all your plans for the next 20 years of this area on this USB stick, and then hold a ceremony with the president of Iceland, the president of the Blue Lagoon Corporation, and do an inauguration ceremony and put this stick into this stone that would be part of the wall of the restaurant." So they did that. They followed the whole thing. And they were able to finish the restaurant, and we went to eat at the restaurant, and in the there's they still have that stone there where they kept the USB stick.
Wow, that was actually going to be the next question I was going to have because you channel the energy. And the question is, because a lot of people are excited to open up to communicate to other beings, how can you discern which beings are here for goodness, which beings are here to facilitate or benefit our harmony on this planet, and which beings we should really not allow in our field?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think discernment, spiritual discernment, is a big topic of study now that we're all kind of independent, in some ways independent practitioners and learning. It's one of the big inner lessons. I think the resonance is a big part of it. It's sort of like with relationships on the human physical level. Some people are very loving, just in loving in general, and that's a good place to keep going or towards. And sometimes people, kind of betray that friendship. And then the higher level, you'd still love them, but maybe you in content, but maybe in form, you might not continue that particular physical interaction anymore because maybe they need to develop. And of course, we need to continue to develop. I think it's the same with the spiritual world. We have that loving heart, and that in itself attracts certain things already. That's already an attractor, and it's also already a barrier because certain things they just don't like to match with that energy, who I might call are maybe less than helpful. But even if we were to encounter something that's less than helpful, we could still be beneficial to them because of our loving energy. But it doesn't mean we have to continue to interact with them. And soon, in that interaction, we'll tend to know that it's not work, like it's not a good vibration. And
If it's
so,
a true friend or not.
yeah, exactly. And then I think the only thing for people who've kind of been more experienced with working with maybe other energies, spiritual beings, is that they always have their own, I guess, power to say, this connection is over, in form. In content, you would always love, but in form, you have that right to just disconnect.
So when it comes to spiritual boundaries, it's not just boundaries between us, it's boundaries between us and other dimensions or other beings or everybody who is here now.
Exactly.
Going back to the children, because we have now built a box that can fit this beautiful advanced angels that are coming in, is it safe to assume that maybe the schooling system that is so structured, like you say, you have year one, you know, you have the entire curriculum in advance, would it be safe to assume that what we're going into expand to the advancedness that these children are, we need to make the school as we go, as we channel the messages and teach what comes through, almost in a way of downloads. It's not something that you can plan in advance.
Yeah. Well, a number of people who've taken like the Arcturian healing method, and just people I've known, whether they're clients or just become friends, you know, are teachers. And one of the things I've noticed is, even if the system can't quite change, like you said, because a lot of educational systems may or may, they may be slow, some are very progressive, the presence of a consciousness of a person who's multidimensional, even though you don't have to act multidimensional, if you know that you're in, like if I was back in science, I could still hold the multidimensional consciousness, but I don't have to try to act multidimensional because that environment just isn't quite there yet. But your consciousness, that vibration would be a start and could be very helpful. So and then probably will change the structure externally. But I think just even having one or two teachers who are open like that, even if the structure hasn't shifted yet, could help children who are, you know, multidimensional coming in.
It's interesting, because I was thinking about that before we began our interview, is that a lot of times just being in the presence of someone that has achieved a certain level of mastery, that alone is healing without even having to do anything. And you're right, having the presence of a teacher who is open, who has that field, who is showing up like a diamond with no restrictions, no blocks, no walls, so to speak, to stop the barrier, the flow of chi, of prana, of life, of love, then that will be the new system. So we almost have to empower our leaders or our light workers to move into the teaching system, or marry the two somehow.
Yes, I think so. And I think so. And I think wherever a person is, you know, in some ways they're always teaching, they're always radiating. And a lot of times, because of this idea, now we're much more comfortable with distance healing, with quantum entanglement. So the people or the beings we're affecting, they don't have to be physically be right in front of us. Like we know that experientially, that we could be influencing and benefiting many beings who really as a field, rather than having to like be physically there to do something with them. So just however we hold their consciousness is already having a huge influence.
When we come back to the first responsibility, which is our own energy field, how we show up in the world, what would be a awakening routine that you do to stay in your light and be that beacon of light for everyone around and hold that space?
Yeah, I think some type of, it doesn't have to be a meditative practice, but for, you know, lack of a better term, some type of contemplative practice. I try to do that right when I get up. Whether that be 10 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour or however long it might be. And people might be practice yoga, people might practice prayer, Tai Chi, you know, some type of energy work. But I think where you're able to disengage from the, or at least get some distance from the, what I call the discursive mind. So that part of us that's always talking, it seems like that's our reality is, you know, we're basically, like my feeling is, we're commenting on the direct experience of reality. And but there's a part of us that is silent, that is not speaking. It's always there. It's just that we tend to focus more on the one that's commentating. So any practice that where you can at least get some distance and be in that silent mind can be very helpful. And if it's whenever it can be, but usually if it's the start of the day, it helps the rest of the day.
So find the practice that allows you to be in that, to go inwards and be silent with you, be present with that space between the to-dos and the thoughts and then the addressing, and simply be. What a present to be here now. Thank you so much. This has been really amazing. One last question for that soul out there that has maybe practiced or tried so many different things. And they're like, oh, it helps for a second. And then I go back to my old ways. Or, oh, this helped a little bit, but I'm still lingering with it. What would you share with them if they're in that moment that maybe they're losing hope?
I think that's a great question. All your questions have been wonderful, really insightful. But it reminds me of, you know, like there is someone who actually said this statement, and the author of it, I'm not remembering right at the moment. But the idea is like when a stone cutter is, you know, cutting out a boulder, they have to kind of hit that boulder 100 times. And a lot of those first 100 times, nothing happens. Then the 101st time, you know, metaphorically, that's when the whole boulder shatters. So is it the 101st hit or is it all those 100 hits? Of course, it's all the 100 hits are dislodging the internal structure, but you just don't see that externally until the 101st hit. So all these exposures people are having, maybe they're not working for them at the time. They are creating internal shifts. And if you look back, and like if I look back, if you were to have followed some of those things and you felt like, oh, I wish I, you know, was more clairvoyant, like everyone else in the class was clairvoyant, if that would have happened then, it might not have been the right timing, like I was saying.
If like I were your seed was planted nine years ago, yeah.
Before, well, you know, by that book, it probably would not have helped me in my graduate work, which I kind of was on and needed to complete. I think our soul has a divine timing, has a wisdom that we may or may not be allowed to see actually at the moment, because even seeing it might change the trajectory. Like if we know we're being paused, it might actually change something that we need to actually learn. So sometimes we have to be paused quietly without fully understanding why. And then there's a chance to move forward. And then upon reflection, we see the wisdom that I think it was us. Was that soul planning.
So find the quiet space, silent the mind, listen to the beauty, to the silence between the thoughts, and always, always come back to your center point of light, of love, of oneness, of the beautiful amazingness that you already are. Thank you, Jean. This has been such a pleasure and honor to share this time with and get to experience your entire entourage. Thank you for bringing the entire family in. And I'm so looking forward to hearing about the activations and the openings that happened for our collective during this talk. And if you need to go back and listen to it again, do so, because every cell in your body will tell you what is the right thing for you. Nobody in the world knows better than you do, because you are the master of your life. Thank you so much, Jean.
Thanks, Veronica. Thanks so much for inviting me to this meeting and this telesummit, and everyone here. Thanks so much.
Until the next time.